Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Cindy Gross, your warrior and host of Cindy's Corner Radio Show, bringing you timely topics in an informative and entertaining manner. Only here can you discuss two timely topics and connect them. Tonight, we have some more from our holiday guide tips and media bias against Israel. Two very different but timely topics. In tonight's opening statement, I want to discuss news that came out today, Time Magazine's Man of the Year issue. By now, you all know about the cover and the choice of Donald J. Trump. Hey, it was pretty obvious that the decision this year, given all the attention that this man has garnered and earned over the past year, actually more closer to 19 months now. Every move he took, everybody who said he couldn't do anything, he did it bigger than ever, whether or not you agreed with it. He actually stood the test of time. But along with the picture and the title given to him, one has to question the title Time Magazine used in describing the Man of the Year. Are we a united or a divided United States? This election was probably one of the most democratic in our entire history. Think about it. Over 20 candidates from at least 5 different recognized parties, multiple debates, endless live events, news that was available 24/7, the use of social media in ways it's been, never been used before. Even there was the occasional accurate, unbiased facts that were shared. But more on that later. The real divide in these United States is among those many sore losers still in la-la land and thinking the election results can suddenly change and overnight Hillary Clinton's going to become the first woman president of the United States. How did she lose? They can't imagine. Where were they when November 8th came and the announcement came that the next president-elect was Donald J. Trump? They were still with the hashtag, I'm with her, or dump Trump. And the many people who made predictions of World War III by Trump supporters are devastated by the transition team and how it is acting and appearing to be. It is hard to believe that these supporters are still so devastated by the loss of the Clinton-Kane team and the winning of Trump-Pence. My question is, where were these people for 8 years watching all of us suffer through the decline of the American middle class, the failure of Obamacare, the lack of respect worldwide from leaders all over, the families of those killed needlessly, either in Benghazi or by illegal immigrants like Kate Steiner? Where were all those crybabies watching cops wrongly accused when they were doing their jobs and riots broke out? Or where were they as they were watching students failing in public schools they are so desperately trying to hold on to and keep as status quo? One person actually had the audacity to say to me, "Don't you understand? Have compassion." I really wanted to say, "Don't you?" But I kept my mouth silent and let them speak. Why is it that we always have to say we're sorry? What are we sorry for? Being happy that Hillary Clinton lost? That Tim Kaine proved to be less than a great VP candidate next to Mike Pence? We all remember that debate. And we remember the responses to many of the questions and the constant interrupting, how rude and unprofessional it was. Should I apologize for participating in a peaceful, classy convention where American flags flew proudly, events started and ended on time, and every single minority group, including the women, Hispanics, and yes, even Muslims and Arabs, were present and participating and supporting the Republican ticket? Should I apologize that the two women who ran the DNC during the past year were both caught in less than professional situations? While we had somebody straight through the entire process who is now becoming chief of staff. How about since the election? Have you thought enough about Keith Ellison even being mentioned as a DNC chair? And where is that new exciting blood in the Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? I know I am singing to the choir, but up to us to stop the nonsense now. Today's headlines are filled with all kinds of silliness that are just too long to even go on with in this five-minute statement. People are blaming Donald Trump's victory for no longer having sex or gaining weight or even refusing to celebrate this holiday season. This is simply nuts. Let's not encourage this level of activity and stupidity. Let's start taking action now. Just a reminder, my holiday gift guide and tips are continually being shared on my Facebook page, on my Instagram, Cindy's Corner Radio Show, and through the various websites, outlets I am connected with. And on next week's show, we are going to feature the best in holiday cakes from Sweet Dreams, and they are cakes for every holiday and every celebration, and the perfect gift for your dogs, from celebrity designer Anthony Rubio, straight from the runways of California as he's preparing for New York Fashion Week in February. Haute couture for all your pet needs. Now getting back to a couple of my own holiday tips. Give yourselves the greatest gift of all, knowledge, as in finding out which designers, celebrities, authors, musicians, reality stars, you get the point. How do they treat us as a group? Do they want our money for the sake of just making money, or do they want our money and respect our choice of who we voted for? A celebrity handbag designer, one very hot right now that is used by all the celebrities, met me recently, and we were talking about doing an interview together for a couple of the outlets that I write for, including one that happens to be very liberal and filled with a lot of Democrats. After we met, I got an email, and the interview was abruptly declined when she realized I worked for a conservative media outlet as well. We have the power of the pocket and apparently a much larger voice than those still sobbing realize. Another great holiday tip. Think of family and friends, a huge trend this year, as being authentic. Your decor, your food, your parties should have rustic homemade themes and purchasing American-made. So many are contacting me for my recipes, entertaining tips, and family fun ideas. I am going to share the eggplant meatballs and spaghetti squash pancakes that I shared on Facebook this week. Here's another great tip. Buy books. There are so many great patriotic books for readers of all ages that share accurate historical facts. Children learn by example. Buy yourself a book. Buy your mate a book. Buy your parents and siblings. And buy your children. Age-appropriate, historically, factually correct book. There is nothing wrong with knowledge. Knowledge is power. We cannot rely on the major networks to share the truth. And speaking of great books, we are going to focus tonight on the highlights of a live event I attended on Sunday featuring media bias. And this one has to do directly towards the bias towards Israel. I'm going to welcome on our first guest, Lee Bender.
Good evening,
Lee.
Cindy.
Are you there? How are you?
I am here. Good evening.
I was just giving my opening statement about all the media bias that's been going on in so many directions in this country, and I was lucky to participate in an event you helped coordinate and spoke at regarding media bias towards Israel. So I'd like for you to introduce yourself first to my audience and tell them the work you do with ZOA, which is something that I'm very proud to be a part of and learn so much from, and tell them exactly what has been going on in regard to media bias towards Israel as we are speaking.
Sure. Well, thank you. Yes, I did speak in New York at a Long Island synagogue on Sunday last week, and I presented a program based upon a book that I wrote with a co-author, a friend of mine named Jerry Verlin. The book is called Pressing Israel, Media Bias Exposed from A to Z. It was published in October of 2012, and unfortunately, and I say this unfortunately, it is still relevant today because the media bias has not gotten any better since that time. It is basically a full-time job. Let me first explain. I am co-president of the Zionist Organization of America Philadelphia chapter. The ZOA is the oldest pro-Israel organization in the United States. It was founded in 1897 by Louis Brandeis. So we are celebrating our 120th anniversary. We've been around a long time. And our mission is to defend Israel and the Jewish people. And I take that as a full-time job, as an ambassador for the truth. That is what I firmly believe in and I feel is my mission. So when I co-authored this book, to my surprise, I didn't have a game plan after we wrote the book. And I have a local publisher here in Philadelphia who has backed us. But it turned out that we got invited to speak at a large organization. And from there it mushroomed, and we realized that there was a thirst for this information. And since that time, I've spoken at over 75 venues, including synagogues and churches and schools and the Jewish federations and Hadassah. I've spoken to audiences as small as 6 and as large as 250, and in some venues we'll go anywhere. I've been to a cigar shop to speak and to a Chinese restaurant and in a supermarket. So we'll go anywhere and do a program and teach people. And we have a PowerPoint presentation, and we show how the media has been hopelessly biased against Israel. And it has to do with the narrative that Israel is considered the big Goliath, and the Palestinian Arabs are a small David, and that's not actually accurate. And I could go on for a long time on this, but maybe let me let you ask me some specific questions.
Well, first of all, I want to explain to people, because you did mention synagogues, and they know that I promote a lot of the pro-Israel Jewish side because I'm a proud Jew and a proud American Jew. But one thing that I love about the Zionist Organization of America, and you could attest to it, is that you don't just speak to Jews of Israel. Your organization and your work actually has an impact on non-Jews as well. So tell us why a non-Jew would be interested in your work as well.
Sure, that's a good question. first of all, thank God that over a vast majority of Americans do support Israel. And why is that? It's not like they're all Jew lovers in particular. It's just that they understand that Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people. It's our ancient homeland. But more importantly, today, it is a democracy. It is an open, liberal democracy like the United States that is fighting for its very existence. And it shares important Judeo-Christian values, which we cherish in the West. Western civilization is under attack, and we have a lot of Christian allies who believe in, religiously some of them, that Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people and has to be protected because the Bible says so. Now, Jews believe that as well, but many Christians fervently believe that. And also, we have partnered and found that we have allies throughout the United States who are non-Jews. And many in Capitol Hill, who they understand that Israel is an asset and an ally of the United States. And a lot of Americans understand that, too. They also understand that Israel's fight. Israel is basically like the canary in the coal mine and is on the front lines of the fight by the Arab Muslim world against the forces of Western civilization. It is actually the most important fight that we are engaged in, whether or not we believe they are at war with us. They are at war with us, and Israel is at the forefront of that fight against the jihadis. And Israel being at the forefront has been, unfortunately, an experiencer firsthand of terrorism, what it means to live in a hostile neighborhood with people who are aligned against them and want to destroy them, and that is their ultimate goal. And that is a goal secularly from the Arabs, and also it is a goal, unfortunately, that we never face, but have to understand that the forces of jihad, of radical Islamic terrorism, wants to destroy Israel, the Jewish state. They consider Israel the little Satan and the United States the big Satan. So Israel's on the front lines, and Israel's experience has helped the United States as well, because being on the front lines, Israel has developed methods and ways to combat terrorism, to fight and to fight effectively, and has used its high-tech startup nation mentality to protect itself. And is thank God it's a strong nation that is able to do so. And it puts its experience to use, and the United States has been a beneficiary of that as well. It is a two-way street. The United States has given over $3 billion a year to Israel. In fact, there was a brand-new memorandum of understanding that was just signed, which is a 10-year, I believe it was $38 billion, which sounds like an awful lot of money. It is, but it's spread over 10 years. The vast majority of that money, by the way, has to be spent in the United States on United States developers of weapons technology, so it actually is a jobs bill for the United States. And Israel is allowed to buy that technology and to enhance it. So there are many reasons why Israel is at the vortex. It is, of course, the home of the Jewish people, as well as the vortex of where Christianity began, and where Islam believes its third holiest city is in Jerusalem. So it's at the vortex of all of these the religions and all of what emanates from there.
Okay, now you and I are fairly knowledgeable because we do a lot of work on it. And a lot of people who listen to this show are engaged and involved politically, but they still might not know some of the key phrases or key targets that lead to the bias. If you had to tell people in a few sentences or less, what should they look out for in a news story that leads to bias, that should put a light bulb in their head, this doesn't sound right?
Sure. Okay, well, something I didn't mention in the very beginning is you asked me what I do, and I did write this book with my co-author, but since that time, as I indicated, media bias continues. Instead of writing another book, because at the time we wrote the book, there was a second Gaza war. There has since been a third Gaza war, which was not covered any better. We developed a website, which people can go to for great information. It's a free website. It's www.factsonisrael.com, all one word. And we now have a brand new app, a mobile app that's free. You could have it right in your fingertips. And what are we talking about here? Well, we have compiled a list of what we call toxic terms. And these are terms that delegitimize Israel and the Jewish people's rights to the land. Now, I also summarize it that Israel wants peace, but its rights and security come first. That is a nice formula that encapsulates also what the ZOA's mission is. Now, what are some of these terms that delegitimize Israel? Well, one big one is West Bank. Now, West Bank might sound like an innocuous term, but in fact, that is a term that was created by Jordan in 1950 after it illegally occupied the territory that were always known as Judea and Samaria. Even the United Nations in 1947, in their own documents on the partition plan, referred to the area as the hill country of Judea. That's because the Judean hills where Jerusalem was located was always called Judea. But when Jordan, after the war of 1948 War of Independence, there were lines drawn. That was simply the lines of an armistice line. And Jordan illegally occupied those lands. Why we say illegally? Because no one else in the world except for Great Britain and Pakistan found that those were legal. And they renamed the area West Bank, which is the West Bank of the Jordan River. And in fact, that area is not the West Bank. And in fact, 1988, Jordan gave up its rights to that area, and it's unallocated territory, and the territory is in fact disputed under international law, but we believe that Israel has far greater rights to it. So that's one word. Another word is occupation. Now, you can't occupy your own, you can't be considered an occupier of your own land, and Israel is constantly being accused of occupying Arab land. The Palestinian Arabs, no Arab nation has ever had their own state, independent state, in the land of the area known as Palestine. And another word is, another phrase is East Jerusalem with a capital E, or another term, traditionally Arab East Jerusalem. And again, these are, in a buzzword, that's an improper terminology. There is no such city as East Jerusalem. East Jerusalem is with a small e, is the eastern part of the eastern neighborhood in Jerusalem, where in fact the old city is located. And what is in the old city? Of course, that's the Temple Mount. And on top of the Temple Mount, when the Arabs conquered Palestine, is their Al-Aqsa Mosque. That is in the old city. It's not traditional Arab East Jerusalem. It's a small e. Jerusalem is only divided in its history, 3,000-year history of the city of Jerusalem, only ever divided for 19 years from 1948 to 1967 when Jordan illegally occupied it, and then Israel was able to recapture that territory in a defensive war in 1967. These are just some of the terms. We list many others, but your ear should go up because each are designed to delegitimize Israel.
Well, you happen to have one of the best presentations. It is very entertaining as well as informative. You have amazing slideshows. You have great cartoons describing the media bias. And it's amazing how people use cartoons and sarcasm to get their point across. And I think people really realize that media bias is in that. I mean, we just assume media bias because of the political campaign. We hear that word every day. But tell us some of the history with some of these cartoons and some of these outlets that we should look out for and like start to take notice. Well, some of the columnists, I know you had one from the Philadelphia Inquirer that was constantly, you were pointing out the media bias in their work. Who are some of the names and where are some of the places we find most of it?
Okay. Well, it's hard to talk about cartoons without actually showing them. But one of our favorite one of our favorite cartoonists is Dry Bones, and his name is Yaakov Kirshen, and he's an Israeli, originally from Brooklyn, I believe, and he is one of the best cartoonists around, and he puts out a cartoon every day. You can actually sign up for his cartoons, Dry Bones, and he's right on target. I know one off the top of my head. He had a cartoon that says talks about the old anti-Semitism, and then he has Jews are demonic and they kill babies, but the new anti-Semitism is Israel, the Jewish state, is demonic and it kills babies. That's just one small example. He has many others that are quite funny. So he's excellent.
And what about in the media? What about like on TV who are some of the people that you find that really show the bias most of the well-known names that we could possibly, you know, see or read about?
Well, look, I'm in Philadelphia. We have a local columnist named Trudy Rubin. I cringe every time I read her articles because I know what I'm at. I'm finding those terms that I mentioned that she constantly mentions, always trying to put Israel in a poor light.
I just want to let people know we're talking about the Philadelphia Inquirer for anybody who's not in Philadelphia, but it is one of the largest daily newspapers in the country still.
I cringe when I listen to NPR because many times their reports are also terribly biased against Israel. They want to put Israel in a poor light and always trying to make it seem like they're whitewashing the Palestinian Arabs. And by the way, that's another term. Never, never, never just say Palestinians. The original Palestinians were us, the Jews, okay? Back in the 1930s and 40s, if you said Palestinians, the Arabs would say, oh, that's the Jews. The Palestine Electric Company, the Palestine Symphony Orchestra, the Palestine Post, which is now called the Jerusalem Post. These were all Jewish entities. Palestinians are Arabs. And in fact, in 1947, again, going back to the UN document, the partition plan, it talks about the two Palestinian peoples. So anyway, getting back to that, the Palestinian NPR always seems to want to whitewash what the Palestinians, Arabs are, what their mission is, what they constantly state. So NPR is terrible. The New York Times typically has very poor coverage of Israel. I would say the Washington Post is not a whole lot better than the New York Times. LA Times also terrible. Good papers that are fair, Wall Street Journal and the New York Post are excellent national newspapers and coverage. The mainstream media on TV typically, NBC, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, typically Israel's not going to get a fair shake. And on CNN, Israel will also generally not get a fair shake. Fox News is probably the only station, and they're fair on both sides. They really are. Will actually cover things. So that's just a broad brush outline. But there are good reporters of some papers that I mentioned, fair, and not every reporter at some of the good papers are basically fair to Israel either. But on the whole, that's how I would assess things.
And I think you probably, you have a great program where it goes into more detail. For my list, first of all, one of the reasons I wanted to discuss this, besides being able to come to the event live, it's Jewish Book Month, and you are an author of a very important nonfiction book. So please share with the audience how they can get your book, and also your partner that you wrote with. You actually had two books. I know one of them you did alone, I think, and one you did together. So please tell my audience where they could find them. It is very important, especially during gift-giving time. It's a great stocking stuffer for any religion. It's very important to know the actual facts. So tell them the titles and where they can get them.
Well, thank you very much for that big plug. Again, the name of our book is Pressing Israel, Media Bias Exposed from A to Z. It's published by Pavilion Press. It's a small press company in Philadelphia. And you can go on the Pavilion, PavilionPress.com, or you can go on Amazon. I believe the book is still available on Amazon. Jerry Verlin, my co-author, previously wrote a book called Israel 3,000 Years, and his book deals with archaeological proofs that the Jewish people have never left the land of Israel, and that's also one of our themes. We've never left, unlike people like Jimmy Carter, who seem to claim that after the temple was destroyed by the Romans in the first century, Jews suddenly appeared in 1948. Absolutely untrue. Jews have never left Jerusalem, never left the land of Israel. We were scattered. And in fact, by the 1840s and 50s and 60s, there was a majority of Jews in Jerusalem. So anyway, that's a little plug. You can find our books on Amazon and Pavilion Press.
One thing you did discuss, and I don't want to get into it because we're going to talk a little bit about BDS with my next guest, but you have a great chart about boycotting Israeli products. Why don't you share with my audience how many products are actually from Israel that people would never in a million years think of boycotting if they knew that they were made in Israel?
Sure. I have a little saying with my slide. I said, if you want to boycott Israel, go ahead, boycott it and do it right. That means you better stop using your cell phones, your computers, tons of medications and medical procedures and medical devices and foodstuffs. And it's amazing how much Israeli technology the Jews have shared with the world. That is Jewish values. We share positively with the world. I wish I could say that about the Palestinian Arabs or Muslim culture. They don't seem to have that as a priority. They haven't shared anything positive that I can see in over 100 years. And in fact, what they seem to have shared, which is horrible to say this, but it's true, is terrorism, and they happen to have a lot of oil. But the Jews, we produce and we share with the world, and there are tons of products that are out there. So BDS, if you want a BDS Israel, boycott, divestment, and sanction Israel, go ahead. Stop using all these things.
It's quite amazing. You guys have, like I said, a great program. How can my listeners contact you and Jerry so that they could arrange for programs where they are?
Well, I don't want to be deluged too much, but I'm the co-president of ZOA, the Zionist Organization of America in Philadelphia, and I would suggest that somebody who wants to contact me can call the office. You can look up the phone number and call ZOA. We also have our own Facebook page, Zionist Organization of America Philadelphia chapter, and someone can contact me there. I'll be happy to reach out. And if you're close by, I'll come to your church or your synagogue within a couple hour drive from Philadelphia. I'll be happy to come at no charge. This is a labor of love for us. We want to educate our people, educate everybody to be an ambassador for the truth.
Well, knowledge is power, and there's nothing like the truth. And like I told you on Sunday in person, I'm sharing with my audience, it was such an enlightening and an entertaining, because you really were entertaining us. You go to so many forums and you just sit there like, when is it going to end? This went on way past it. It was like 2 hours, and it just, the time just flew. And the information you shared with us just now in these few minutes, it was just a little smidge of what we really have to know. And what we have to do, as my audience is a little more informed, is to get the word out any possible way. So I will be putting up all the information on my website. And again, I want to say thank you for joining us. Any closing remarks before we go on to our commercial?
As I said, it is all our job to be an ambassador for the truth and to be a good American. We are for Judeo-Christian values, and we need to protect them because they are under assault.
Well, again, I am going to have it posted, and the guest is Lee Bender, from the Zionist Organizations of America in the Philadelphia chapter. And thank you again so much. And I hope that we could have you on a topic that is different, because hopefully we'll be able to one day end all this bias and all this attention to one little country that is surrounded by so many others that are not friends of America. So thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it, and I would be happy to come back again.
Great. We are going to commercial, and when we come back, Alan Skorsky.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with the beard in the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
Welcome back. The next guest wrote a book called Israel Betrayed, and on the front cover, it was endorsed by Lieutenant Colonel Alan B. West, as this is a must-read. That is, if you care about supporting our best ally in the Middle East, that is deteriorating. Welcome, Alan Skorsky, to my show.
Good evening, Cindy, and thank you for having me.
Well, besides being friends, besides agreeing on almost everything politically, you have such an important message, and you do it in such an informative, factual way. Tell us a little bit about your book, Israel Betrayed.
Well, you know, the subtitle of the book is How the Democrats, J Street, and the Jewish Left Have Undermined Israel, and Why a President Hillary Clinton Would Be Disastrous for Israel. Now, since early November, we no longer have to worry about what Hillary Clinton would do. However, we still have to worry about the Democrat Party and J Street and the Jewish left, because as we've seen since his election, groups like the ADL and other left-wing Jewish groups and the Democrat Party have attacked Donald Trump relentlessly, and they've called Steve Bannon an anti-Semite, even though the ADL came out with a press release against him. At the end, they admitted they have no direct evidence that he ever did anything that was anti-Semitic. And just like George W. Bush, when he became president in 2000, and it was clear how friendly and supportive of Ariel Sharon and Israel he was going to be, groups like the National Jewish Democratic Council came out, attacked him, and they took out a full-page ad in the Jewish Week saying George W. Bush gets an F on American Jewish values. And they will do the same thing to Donald Trump. If he's too pro-Israel, they will accuse him of getting too cozy with the Israeli right and pandering to the American Jewish right and making it more difficult to create a peace process. If he goes back on some of his promises, they'll say that he's anti-Israel. So either way, no matter what he does, and I believe he will be very pro-Israel, if you look at his advisors, if you look at his vice president and his cabinet, he could possibly be one of the most pro-Israel presidents we've ever had. But for the Jewish left, they will attack him no matter what he does. And that's why it is so important to expose them that they are not pro-Israel, but they are advancing a progressive agenda.
Alan, many of my listeners are not Jewish and don't understand the concept of a Jewish Democrat left-winger or groups like J Street. Maybe in a few words or less, you can explain to them what J Street is, who it's run by, and what is their goal?
So J Street is a left-wing peace now type of group. Their agenda is to undermine the state of Israel as it exists. They are funded by people like George Soros, who are anti-Israel and believe that Israel's policies are the reason for instability in the region. Their board includes members who are supportive, who are lobbyists for the government of Iran and other Islamic groups in America. J Street works. Their single focus is to have Israel's security and standing compromised. And I'll give you a few examples. At their 2015 conference, they had a number of speakers. One of them was Marsha Friedman, who said that Israel should cease existing as a Jewish state, but that Jews there should live as a protected minority in a democratic Palestine. Now, you think on the surface of it how absurd that is. One, that Israel shouldn't be a Jewish state. B, that Jews would be protected in a democratic Palestine when there isn't a single democratic Arab country in the Middle East. So on the surface of it, it was absurd. And the audience applauded it. One after another bashed Israel. Dennis McDonough, who was Obama's chief of staff, said that 50 years of occupation must end. Thunderous standing ovation. Saeb Erekat, one of the chief negotiators for the PLO and now for the Palestinian Authority, said that the Palestinian people have never had better friends than Barack Obama or John Kerry. So that is what that is who J Street is, and that's what the Jewish left is all about, whether it's Trua, whether it's the Reform rabbinical leadership in America. They believe that Israel is guilty of oppressing the Palestinians. They've used words like apartheid on numerous occasions, and that's why we have to fight against them. We have to fight back. We have to expose them, and we cannot allow them to become a voice for the pro-Israel movement. You know, years ago, before the Obama administration, there was AIPAC, and they were seen as a group that lobbies on behalf of Israel. What J Street did was they gave Democrats who don't support Israel, they gave them cover. They said, we will tell you that you can go your own way on Israel, and we'll give you cover. And just one example that was recent, on the nuclear Iran deal, Barack Obama, his administration, paid J Street to go out and give Jewish Democrats cover to support the nuclear Iran deal. As dangerous as it was for this country and for Israel, J Street gives anti-Israel Democrats, whether it's Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, Gerald Nadler of Brooklyn, who's terrible, and other left-wingers, Steve Cohen of Tennessee, they give them cover. And that's what makes them so dangerous. You know, in Michael Oren's book, Michael Oren is the former ambassador from Israel to the United States, and he wrote a great book called Ally. And he said that he wanted to meet with people, he wanted to meet members of J Street, because at that time the government of Israel did not want to meet with any of them because of all the anti-Israel work they were doing. And Michael said that he met with a board member, and he asked him, why are you in J Street? And his answer was, because I'm too uncomfortable with how close the U.S. and Israel were under the previous administration. Edgar Bronfman, the former, you know, he was dubbed the Prince of the Jews, a former philanthropist for causes he believed in. He said that he supported Barack Obama because, unlike George W. Bush, Obama would not reflexively support everything that Israel does. And that is a big part of what motivates the Jewish left, whether it's Peter Beinart, whether it's other reform groups or other progressive Jewish groups. They didn't like the idea of a United States that reflexively just supported the government of Israel, especially when the prime minister is from the Likud party.
Well, I have to ask, I know this is a question that's asked of me all the time that maybe you could answer as well. Being you're talking about Jewish bias from Jews, people who are not Jewish always ask me, how could Jews support people like Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama? And yet, even in this election, even though the numbers were higher for Donald Trump, still too many Jews voted Democratic. How do you answer that to non-Jews? Because so many of my listeners, especially a lot of my listeners, are in places like Indiana and Iowa and Oklahoma. And they're not surrounded by Jews and don't see a Jewish daily lifestyle. So how do you explain this to non-Jews?
Because, unfortunately, regrettably, most Jews in America are liberal. And if you're a liberal and you identify with liberal ideology, doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Catholic, atheist, liberals have an agenda, and support for Israel is not part of that agenda. Remember, Israel is a strong country, and liberals see themselves as fighters for the underdog. So it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong or good versus evil. The fact that Israel is a strong country and so closely allied with the United States, it automatically makes them a country that has to be looked at through a jaundiced eye. So for Jewish liberals, they see their mission to be good liberals is to criticize the state of Israel. They don't say, we're Jewish, therefore we're going to support you. They say, we are liberal. Your government, your country is too conservative. You're too strong. You're too aligned with conservative ideology. Therefore, we're going to support the underdog who they view as the Palestinians. Now, never mind that the Palestinians, and we can go through the whole history, never mind that there was never an Arab country called Palestine. Never mind that today the Palestinian leadership calls all of Israel occupied Palestine and that they will never allow a Jew to live in Palestine, no matter how harsh the rhetoric from the Palestinians. And it's open there. It's not a secret. Whatever I'm telling you, Barack Obama and his administration knows. They know that the Palestinians will never recognize Israel as a Jewish state. And yet they will promote the concept of a peaceful Palestine living side by side with Israel. Even though, again, Netanyahu has said, we will accept a two-state solution on a few conditions. One, the Palestinian state be disarmed. And secondly, that they recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Well, Barack Obama, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton, they don't have those preconditions. They don't require that the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state. So that is the reason, the single reason why there cannot be a peace process. Because if your enemies will not recognize what you are and who you are, then they will never accept you once the paper, once the agreement is signed. We saw that after the Oslo Accords. Yasser Arafat was rescued from Tunisia. It was Shimon Peres and the Israeli left that gave Yasser Arafat a chance. They thought that because he was so weakened, that if they give him a chance now to represent the Palestinians as a statesman, they can have peace. Arafat came back. Bill Clinton was happy to have him at the White House. And once he signed on the dotted line, terror attacks against Israel skyrocketed to record levels. The Clinton administration didn't care. In his book, The Missing Piece, former ambassador Dennis Ross wrote that the Clinton administration ignored willfully all of the violations because it was more important to them to have the legacy of a Palestinian state than whether or not they would ever live peacefully with Israel. And it has to boggle the mind, no matter what party you belong to or what your ideology is, why on earth would you want to support another country that is based on terrorism? Aren't there enough terrorist countries in the Middle East right now? Why on earth would you want another one right on the border of our only ally in the Middle East?
That's a great question. And that's something I'm going to ask you to lead into. Where do you see, since we're talking a lot about media bias, what do you see happening with the transition with Trump? And with what you're discussing, and where the groups like J Street and others will go, like that you have mentioned, where they thought they were going to have strength with the Clinton-Cain administration, and now they are the minorities, not only in the president in the White House, but in Congress, in local and state governments, in the governor's mansions. So where do groups like this go?
Well, look, the Democrats have been weakened, and the beauty of it is that they don't even recognize it. The fact that Nancy Pelosi was reelected to be the minority leader, the fact that the Democrats want Keith Ellison to lead the Democrat part, the DNC, they still don't understand why they can't connect. Donald Trump, his vice president, Mike Pence, is probably the most pro-Israel vice president in history. The fact that he has people like John Bolton on his list of secretaries of state, Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, these people are pro-Israel hawks. So for the first time, and the Republican platform for the first time has taken the two-state solution off the table as a requirement to have peace. This has never happened before. So the Democrats will be compromised as far as anything they want to do to Israel because they don't have control of either chambers of Congress, the presidency, so they're going to be weakened. Now, J Street is not going to go away because they're not going to give up what they had for the last 8 years. So they will still try and persuade Democrats to vote against Israel, especially as Donald Trump moves more and more towards the right. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been written up in a number of left-wing publications attacking him for all of the support he's given to Jewish groups that live in Judea and Samaria, which the media calls the West Bank. So they're scared about it, and they're going to attack him for it. But as far as this administration goes, at least for the next four years, you will see the most pro-Israel administration probably in history. And that's saying a lot when you consider that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, and for a while Colin Powell, were pretty strong on Israel. And when you have someone like Nikki Haley, who's going to be the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., her state was the first state to reject anything associated with BDS. This is going to be a strong administration, but the left will not stop. They will attack him, and it'll be relentless. And we have to fight back, and you have university campuses where anti-Semitism is thriving. with groups like Students for Justice in Palestine, who are supported by groups like the New Israel Fund and J Street. And listen, I'm happy to have read that Donald Trump said that they are going to look into and they're going to investigate anti-Semitism on college campuses. And maybe they can help, you know, put a dent on all the Israel anti-Israel activism on college campuses today. But it is a real battle. It's not going away. The Palestinians are more emboldened than ever since Barack Obama gave them legitimacy. If you watched Obama's speech yesterday to veterans, and he spoke about the importance of diplomacy, and he said, if you don't have more diplomacy, you're going to see more wars, whether it's in countries like Syria or Israel or Palestine. Well, there is no country called Palestine. But once again, Barack Obama is doing his utmost to make sure that a Palestine is recognized. Jimmy Carter has called for Barack Obama to recognize Palestine before he leaves office. And had Hillary Clinton won, I have no doubt that that's exactly what he would have done. Thank God, again, that is not the case. But the fight for Israel is not going to cease. And with the strong relationship between Trump and Netanyahu, you will see the left become much more aggressive in their attacks on Donald Trump.
So are we going to get more media bias as opposed to less, despite the fact that the Democrats are in a minority? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, remember, the media toes the Democrat line. Whenever the Democrats, whatever their agenda is, they will have the media backing them up on it. Again, right now the Democrats are a bit compromised. They won't be able to do too much, but they will still carry the water for the agenda of creating a country called Palestine. Until the Palestinians, until Mahmoud Abbas and his whole PA government is stopped, the attacks against Israel will not cease from the media. Now, I was very heartened to read that Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina wants to end all financial aid to the Palestinians, which totals to close to $1 billion a year. So that will be the first step, and then we'll see what happens after that.
What do you think is going to happen with the Iran deal? Because there's been talk about it the past couple of days in the news and with Trump. Will he be able to successfully stop the deal or at least diminish power?
Listen, if anyone can do it, look at what he's already done, and he hasn't even been sworn in yet. The people he is bringing into his cabinet for Homeland Security, for National Security Advisor, these are all people who despise Iran. These are not people known for their niceties or how they speak about radical Islam. If anyone is going to put a halt to the Iran nuclear deal, it is this administration, and the fact that the mullahs of Iran are already making threats already shows you how seriously they take him.
Where can my listeners find your book?
Well, if they go to Amazon, Israel Betrayed, or if they go to IsraelBetrayed.com, they can get the book through Amazon there. But I made it exclusively available through Amazon so they can get discount pricing on it. So the book is titled Israel Betrayed. The author is Alan Skorsky. It's a very informative book. And if I can even throw in there that when I spoke to David Friedman at the event that I met you at, David Friedman, for your listeners, he is Donald Trump's senior advisor on Israel. He told me he read the book and he loved it. And he said that the book says everything that needs to be said. And that's why, again, this book is informative. It's not complex. It identifies who all of the guilty parties are, all of the people who have contributed to hurting Israel, whether it's the ADL, whether it's Peter Beinart, whether it's Israel's most left-wing newspaper called Haaretz, which makes the New York Times look like the Wall Street Journal. Identify who all of the people are who have hurt Israel and what they've done in their own words. It identifies all of the Jewish ambassadors who worked for Democrat administrations who have harmed Israel. So the book is informative. We identify even in polling data, when Democrats say that when it comes to Israel, both parties are the same, the polling data shows overwhelmingly that Republican voters will only vote for a candidate who is pro-Israel, whereas when it comes to Democrats, voters do not care if their candidate is pro-Israel. And you saw that during the debates between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Israel never came up, and even when they had a debate in Brooklyn, Bernie Sanders shamed Hillary Clinton for speaking at AIPAC and not talking about Palestinian suffering. The audience applauded. Hillary Clinton didn't know what to say. So this book clearly identifies that Israel really is not supported. It's not a bipartisan issue as much as the Democrats would like it to be, because they count on Jewish votes in certain states and they want Jewish money. But as I predicted 10 years ago, as soon as the Arab and Muslim and pro-Palestinian voters in America become more sophisticated, the Democrats will go their way. You saw it in 2000 when Al Gore and Joe Lieberman ran. They told Dearborn, Michigan, the largest population of Palestinians outside the Middle East, that they will be more balanced than Bill Clinton was, and Bill Clinton wasn't that balanced. So this has been the direction of the Democrat Party, to move ever so slightly, again, and it's not even subtle anymore, towards the Palestinian side. You saw it at the 2012 convention when they left support for Jerusalem out of the party platform. You saw it in 2016, the Palestinian flags waving inside the convention hall and Israeli flags being burned outside the hall. This is the direction of the Democrat Party. And if Israel matters to you, then the Republican Party is where you belong. Doesn't, you know, you don't have to agree with everything that the Republicans stand for. I have liberal friends who vote Democrat usually, but because Israel was so important to them, they said that this time we're voting for Donald Trump and Mike Pence. And that's a first, so that's very important.
Well, I could tell you that not only did Alan West endorse your book, but I'd like to read another endorsement that many of my listeners probably know the name. Israel Betrayed is a trove of indispensable information on and invaluable insights into the forces gathering to destroy the Jewish state. David Horowitz, best-selling author, frontpagemag.com, and the Freedom Center. There are so many names connected to this book, Jewish and non-Jewish, minorities,
right, and
from all
right.
different backgrounds.
And we also got verbal endorsements. We're going to be endorsed when we come up with a new edition probably next year. Congressman Steve King from Iowa and Trent Franks also. They gave me verbal endorsements, and on our website we're going to put their endorsements up probably after the new year as well.
I met both of them at the convention. Both of them were as nice as can be. I had the best time with Steve King, if I could tell you. I was with Steve Lonergan, who is a close friend of his and mine, and he was shopping right by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so it was a lot of fun talking with him and his son, and they are strong supporters. And Trent Franks and I were at the Republican Jewish Coalition gathering together and talking a long time, and he also strong supporter of Israel, so this is great. And it's very important to people that realize it could be today the Jewish state of Israel, but you never know what it's going to be next. So if they don't stand up for something as important as this, the only democracy in such a volatile area of the world, then what are they going to stand up for? So it's really quite important. And again, it's Jewish Book Month. You are an amazing nonfiction author, and I am proud to have you on my show. Any last remarks before we have to close?
I want to thank you. I want to wish you a happy Hanukkah, wish your listeners a Merry Christmas. I see, like Donald Trump, I'm not a PC kind of guy. I see Merry Christmas. I don't go for the happy holiday stuff.
I even say happy Kwanzaa. So we're really politically correct.
Good.
And we are lucky that we live in a country that we have a choice. We could celebrate nothing, or depending on the marriages and the intermarriages, some families celebrate both, but we are lucky that we can live in a country that we could choose how and what we want to do with our religion. And one thing we have to do is end media bias, end the idea of distorted facts, rewriting history in our classrooms, rewriting it in our media. And with people like you, hopefully one day this will not be a topic, because you are a strong support for the truth. And you are also someone who is not afraid to speak out. You write articles. Like you said, you speak publicly. So thank you so much for coming on the show. And I will share with my listeners, again, the information they can get online to get the book on Amazon. And thank you again.
Thank you for having me. Have a great night.
You too. So there we are. We're about to wrap it up. Just holiday tips. One tip in particular, when you go for your holiday gifts, find out who is making that gift and if they support your beliefs. Because as I told you, this is something that we have the power of the purse and the power of our voices. We don't have to hear Hollywood put us down because we don't have to go to their movies. We don't have to listen to people like Sally Field say they still can't believe Trump is president. We don't have to listen to music by people who don't support Israel, like Roger Waters. We don't have to buy from clothing designers that won't make dresses for Melania Trump. We don't have to read books from authors that don't want to come on our show as guests. There are many people who are like us, patriotic, conservatives, believing in the Constitution, believing in democracy, and believing that when an election is held and someone is elected to an office, whether or not it's the president-elect or a governor or a senator, we show respect whether or not it was the person we voted for or not. So next week, we're going to have two guests, again, going back to the holiday festivities. This is Cindy's Corner. From my corner to yours, Cindy Gross is saying good night.